is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome on in to the Lineup Logic Podcast, the daily fantasy podcast, bringing you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate. This is our first NFL show of the week. I am sorry I am behind this week. This is Wednesday morning. I'm recording first thing. Finished my notes yesterday late. Wanted to get some Z's, man. So I didn't record last night. Figured I'd wake up bright and early, get the kiddos out the door, and then go ahead and break down this game-by-game slate NFL Week 10 coming at you. We got a couple teams on bye, but we have a smaller bye week than we've had in the last couple weeks. Some real nice games. As you guys know, we're going to go Thursday to Monday, and then on the main slate, I'll organize the games by total. So lowest to highest total. Our lowest is in Chicago, our highest in Atlanta. Some really nice spots. I mean, some teams that are really in make or break for their season right now. And some teams that should just go full Suns mode and, shut down Eric Bledsoe. Even if Eric Bledsoe's not on their team, they should shut down Eric Bledsoe and Tyson Chandler and sit them on the bench just so that the rest of the team understands exactly what they're doing. Tanking. It's a great slate. It actually is really interesting. Again, loaded. It's one of those slates you look at it at first glance, you go, meh, okay, yeah, okay. And then you're like, whoa, well, there's a spot. That's a spot. And all of a sudden your player pool's 65 guys, and you're like, I don't know. It might just be Josh McCown stacks all day. Whoa, what? Definitely some interesting injury news, too. We're going to have to talk about some of the stuff that injury-wise, I mean, they're just stacking up. So we will talk about all of that as well. Don't worry about it. Before I go too much further, guys, Harry's.com/lineup. Jump over to Harry's. I've talked about this. I'm a Harry's razor guy. I have been for years. Just high-quality blades, high-quality everything. You can try it. You don't have to just take my word for it. Just go over there. Get you the free razor. Get you a free razor, free shaving cream. You got it. It's at the house. All you got to do is sign up for the trial, pay the shipping. Boom, it's there. But make sure you go to harrys.com/lineup to claim your free trial package. Now, as I mentioned, comes with the razor, the handle, the shaving cream, and the travel case for the blade. So harrys.com/lineup, jump in there, please. All right, jumping straight into the slate, let's see what we got. Thursday night should be a blowout. Seattle, Arizona, 41.5 point total, 24-18. Obviously, Seattle favored by, it's 5.5 right now. So I wouldn't be surprised to see this move a little bit more towards Seattle, probably close at 6 full points. People are hitting the under, though. It's moving down. The total's moving down, and 72% of public money on Seattle to cover them, or money line bets, or spread bets on Seattle. So, yeah, obviously, Arizona barely beat San Francisco last week, and Adrian Peterson, had to carry the ball 45 times, like he was a kid again. In AFPA rankings, Arizona goes 26-9, 29-6 to the core positions, obviously struggling with the pass defense, but very solid front seven unit. Seattle, solid across the board. It's 3, 12, 20, and 15. Now, one of the things that I like to make sure is I like to make sure that this aligns with other metrics that I see, right? The standard counting stats, like the, rush yards per game, stuff like that, as well as the, first down conversion rate, completion rate, success, all that kind of stuff. So when I talk about AFPA, it's really good, but it's also one of the things we have to be aware of is it can be dependent on game script. It can be dependent on matchup schedule. It's stuff like that, and you see different quarterbacks at different times in their season or when players are injured and stuff like that. So it's not that it's misleading, like bad defenses are bad. So the really, really bad defenses here, like Arizona's pass defense, for example, exploitable. Seattle should be able to blow them up. It's the margins, though, where we have to think, and be careful. It's like, why is Seattle rated 15th against the tight end? Well, how good are they? How bad are they? that's when you really need to investigate. So when you see the outlier numbers, anything below a 25, that is when you really want to attack that spot, which, you know, there's enough on this slate this week that you really don't have to worry about the margins. But when you're thinking about margin plays, that's kind of where you want to go. I didn't even give my takes on the game. It's just going to be ugly. It's Thursday night. It's, you know, Seattle coming off that tough loss to Washington. You got to think that they're probably, you know, just kind of irritated with themselves for losing that game. You know, tip of the cap to Washington, but they shouldn't, you shouldn't lose at home to a team that banged up. You really shouldn't. I think it says more about Seattle's playoff chances than anything. You know, if you can take away their passing game and you have a decent pass rush, Seattle's in trouble. So they should be able to limit, but on their defensive side, you know, I think they come out pretty focused. They should be able to limit Stanton. He's no Kirk Cousins. Adrian Peterson, yes, he should be able to do a decent job, but when you have a quarterback like Stanton who, you know, was fine, he was serviceable, but against a Seattle pass rush, a Seattle pass defense versus a San Francisco pass defense, they just have a massive, it's a massive difference. I see Adrian Peterson on the short week. He's not going to get the same workload. You can't give a 31-year-old man, 32-year-old, I don't know how, remember how old he is, but you can't give a 31-year-old man that kind of work. I mean, I go for a jog and I can't take the same workload the next day. And we're only talking about, you know, running with the stroller. So Arizona, no way of stopping the receivers either, though. So you have to like the passing offense for Seattle. They just don't really have a run game. Now, Eddie Lacy is out with the groin. Thomas Rawls has finally wrestled control, I think, just by default. J.D. McKissic hasn't really been a thing recently. So, you know, you certainly think that it's going to be Thomas Rawls getting most of the carries, the most of the snaps. That is the most likely scenario. But it's not worth it. What you really want to attack is you just want to attack these Seattle wide receivers and just kind of say, you know what? Patrick Peterson can't guard everybody. They're going to move him around the formation. And Russell Wilson is one of the best scramblers in the league. So, that is absolutely where we want to be in this game. And that's kind of the end of it. Moving on to the main slate, Green Bay at Chicago has the lowest total on the week at 38 points, 16.75 points implied for Green Bay, 21 implied for Chicago. Chicago favored by 4.5. Massive public money on the under, but they're not moving the line. This is really interesting. 92% of public bets have hit the under, but they have not moved the line off of 38. I don't know if this is just like a basic threshold that they have for NFL games that they won't touch it. It was interesting. I heard Warren Sharp talking about betting unders, and he's like, and Evan Silva, and they were like, it's just not sharp. Don't bet an under. It's just not sharp. They're too hard to predict. Game script goes out the window too when teams are trailing big and you think that a game could actually go under. Coaches change their game script, they get way more aggressive, and one play can completely change it. And we've seen garbage time stuff hurt everything this week. I mean, I lost like I think almost $300 because of the fucking Dolphins 2-point conversion. So don't bet unders. If anything, I think betting the over here is interesting because you have two kind of middle of the pack defenses, and specifically Green Bay's defense has been actually pretty bad. 16 to the quarterback, 25 to the running back and wide receiver. But they've been the best tight end of defense. But you know, I mean, we don't have really a lot of tight end tools in, in Chicago right now with no Zach Miller there. You have Deion Sims, who actually has been pretty useful. And in fact, he was targeted a lot, but you know, Green Bay is going to probably take that away from them. Chicago, definitely the better defense right now, ranking 7th against the quarterback, 15th to the running back, 5 and 14 respectively, not allowing a lot of fantasy points. They grind the clock. It's partially game script, just the way that they approach. But they've had some tough games against some decent QBs. So I think against a bad quarterback in Brett Hundley, I mean, he's not bad. Like, Brett Hundley will be and could be fine if he got more snaps and he was in a system where he had more repetition and it was his system designed around him. This is not his system. It's not designed around him. He's only had a couple snaps. But he's not going to win many games, and he's not going to be effective, and he's not going to be a fantasy asset, especially against the Chicago defense that's been very good. They do, however, allow a 70% completion rate. That's 28th in the league. This is the Green Bay defense. I wrote down the wrong name. A 70% completion rate, 28th in the league, and allow 10th most pass yards. They really, in the pass rush, hasn't been there. I mean, Green Bay is supposed to be a pass rush team, 4.7 sack rate. That's bottom five in the league. So they're just not there this year. Bears defense, like I mentioned, very above average in a lot of places. They're not in the top 10, but they're in the top 15 in a lot of grades. Let's just call it that. They're very solidly above average, floating around the 10 mark. Very good considering how bad their pass offense is and how bad their offense has been in general, how inefficient their offense has been in general. If they had a more efficient offense, I think this defense would really benefit. The defense has been really, really solid. The rush offense, however, is in a killer spot here. No doubt for Jordan Howard. Nearly 5 yards per carry. That's top five mark in the league. And we saw him against the New Orleans rush D go off, a spot that, you know, Doug Martin and all those Tampa Bay backs couldn't even touch. And Chicago really put pressure on New Orleans. Not even close in Tampa Bay. I mean, I think that's a really interesting comparison. You have two seemingly lopsided home affairs. The Bears cover, and the Bucs get blown out. What's the phrase? Good teams win, great teams cover. The Bears covered in that game, and they were in it. And if that Zach Miller touchdown had counted, and I think you would have seen a much more nail-biting experience. And that's kind of been the Bears' role this year. It's like, don't underestimate us. Don't underestimate us. We're coming after you. As long as we don't give up a big play, we're going to stay in this the whole way. I think they win this game easily. Not easily. I think they win this game. And I think Trubisky could probably have a good one. And I think, I don't think for fantasy purposes, I don't think he's, I mean, if you need to stream a quarterback for season long, maybe, and you have nobody there. But he just doesn't have a very serious ceiling, especially with Jordan Howard came in a really, really good spot to smash here. They're going to lean on the running backs. And Jordan Howard, all things go through him. But I think you're going to see a pretty solid game from Trubisky here. And maybe Kendall Wright is the beneficiary of that. He is the lead target amongst wide receivers. So, if he didn't, he's got the drops sometimes. But I think that he could certainly be an interesting option. And Green Bay is terrible against the wide receiver one. So plays from this game, Jordan Howard for sure, Kendall Wright in tournaments. Then nothing on the Green Bay side for me. Cincinnati at Tennessee, 40.5 points here. 22 implied for Tennessee. 18 implied for Cincinnati. Tennessee -4. This line, though, opened much heavier in Tennessee's favor, and it's moving towards Cincinnati. Cincinnati ranking 14th, 11th, 9th, and 18th in AFPA, a solid defense. It's interesting. You know, they're very similar unit to the Bears by these numbers, but we think of Cincinnati as an elite defense, and we don't think of the Bears as an elite defense. We just kind of think of them as a good defense. Public perception, baby. Tennessee, 22, 17, 23, 16. They've struggled with the pass earlier in the year, but they're getting better. I think this game is a trap. I think this game is a death trap of mediocrity and running the football. There's one stat that really, really kills this game for me above them all, and I couldn't believe when I saw it. These teams are 28th and 29th in third down conversion rate. That's a really, really big deal. Why? Well, probably because of play calling. And on the Cincinnati side, because you have no clear identity. You've had nothing that was super effective beyond AJ Green this year in a couple spots. Your offensive line has been terrible against the blitz, so Dalton has been you know, under duress all season long. And on the Tennessee side, because Exotic Smash Mouth is not a thing, and you're trying to run the ball in situations, you have one of the most uncreative offenses in the NFL, and it is pretty easy to read once it's on film. And Mariota, with a hobbled hamstring, can't create on the ground and be elusive, which was what he was good at last year down the stretch. I think you can't roster Mariota against a decent defense here. I don't think Mariota is in play in this spot. Just doesn't make sense. Decent, you know, run first offense. Cincinnati has good pass defense, healthy corners. You know, and we're getting Corey Davis back, which is nice. I think there's going to be weeks when we can go to Mariota in the future here. We will be able to go to him as he gets more healthy and this offense gets more healthy. But you just can't do it this week. I think it's a wait and see and a big slate. You know, and the hard part is we don't know which wide receiver he's going to fall in love with. Is it going to be Davis? Is it going to be Davis clears up a lot more volume for Matthews, you know, as they spread out the offense, it's going to make things easier on the pass offense. I have no idea. And no clear wide receiver has emerged. So the only play from this game for me is AJ Green. He's matchup proof against a mediocre to subpar, you know, pass defense. That's it for me, AJ Green. I'm actually worried because Tennessee, even though they've allowed a lot of fantasy points to wide receivers and they've been shredded in a couple matchups, they're actually seventh in DVOA to the wide receivers. So they haven't been that much of a problem, and he will likely line up across from Logan Ryan, who has been very good. I mean, Logan Ryan took T.Y. Hilton out of the game in that Indianapolis game. So certainly not a smash spot for AJ, but a good spot. I think he's one of the better tournament plays on the slate, especially coming back off that, you know, suspension, in-game suspension. Moving on, we have the Clippers. Oh, man, that's where my head's at, guys. Chargers versus the Jacksonville Jaguars, 41-point total in this one. Jacksonville favored by 4, 18 to 21, 18.5, 22.5. These are two defenses built in the exact same mold. Chargers, 17-2 in adjusted fantasy points allowed. Jacksonville, 116-1 in 24. So the model is very clear. Get to the quarterback, shut down the wide receivers. Who gives a fuck what happens in the middle of the field? You know, they're both doing, and the thing about it is they're clones of each other, and the pass rush, pass defense, you know, it limits the evil. These teams are winning games. They've allowed some of the least scoring in the league, but the most yards per carry to running backs. So Fournette is probably the biggest play here, as long as he's not in the doghouse and beating a timeshare. That's a concern. I mean, that's a real thing. I don't trust Doug Marrone. You know, Rivers and Gordon, you can't go there. I just don't see Melvin Gordon getting anything going here, to be honest with you. Oh, my God. And you attach your running back to a pass offense that can't get anything done, you're going to limit your upside. That's just the way things work in the NFL, right? I mean, you don't want to do that. So Gordon, for me, not that interested. The Chargers played the Broncos twice this year, and it's a very similar model of defense, right? Pass rush, you know, good corners, and very little running back for production for Gordon in those games. Now, will he catch some balls out of the backfield? Yes, but it's going to be a low-scoring affair. I think these plays, you know, they line up similarly. I'm just not that interested I don't know how interested I am in both of them. I think Fournette is probably the more interesting play, only because he's healthy, he's at home, and he has the advantage here. But, you know, we can see these games. This game I could see going under, comfortably going under, and both of these teams really just kind of putting on a defensive show and making these quarterbacks' lives hell. So I think Fournette is really the only play that I'm going to take away from this one. Minnesota at Washington. This one is interesting to me. This is a very interesting game. On the Minnesota side, really, 41-point total, 21-20. Minnesota 1-point road favorites, and it's moving towards the Skins. It opened as a wider line, and the Skins, I think after that Seattle game, people are saying, look at these guys. Listen, this is a letdown spot for the Skins. Minnesota ranks 14 and 12 across the board in AFPA. Washington 11-7-2. Really been very good to the wide receiver. Very hard on the wide receivers. Josh Norman, Breshad Breeland. This is a good secondary. And 26 to the tight end. Case Keenum probably starting, no questions asked. I think Teddy Bridgewater's been activated, but there's just no reason to mess with that. If something else happens, I might start the Washington D, honestly. But Case Keenum has been, you know, solid enough in this situation that I think that the Minnesota offense will be okay. Minnesota defense is good here. I mean, they're in a good spot, and I'm not interested in going to any Redskins in this situation. They have a couple ugly numbers, man. They only allow 17 points per game. They only allow 4.6 yards per play. They only allow a 27% third down conversion rate. That's one of the lowest in the league. And they allow the fewest numbers of touchdowns per game. They are phenomenal in the red zone. So even if the Redskins are knocking on the door, they're going to struggle. I think the easiest way for the Redskins to probably score in this one is trying to get some broken plays. I just don't really see it against a team that just came off the bye. They've had extra time to prepare. Redskins are flying east to west, you know, all that stuff, west to east, all that stuff. Big win, letdown spot for them. The rush D on Washington, the Washington defense is interesting. We see these elite marks, you know, and the pass defense is phenomenal. I mean, Adam Thielen's in a good spot just because he's been, you know, the primary receiver there for a long time. And I think Stephon Diggs will come back with a vengeance here and hopefully get healthy, but kind of a homecoming narrative for him. He's from Maryland, if we remember that. But, you know, I mean, Minnesota healthy coming off the bye. The Washington defense feels like it could be in trouble here. They're kind of overperforming in some ways from a fantasy perspective. Now, the thing that I will say, the reason they're not overperforming is their corners are elite. And this is what I keep talking about, is if you have elite corners, you can stop a whole offense because you're stopping them on third down. You're stopping them from big plays. You're forcing them into 4-yard gains. And it just doesn't create a lot of production. The rush defense has some questions. You know, they're allowing over 4 yards per carry. They're allowing nearly 4.4 points per play. And almost the whole defense is allowing almost 3 touchdowns per game. That's not good. They're ranking well in DVOA. They're ranking well in fantasy points allowed, but they're not ranking well in, like, the measurables. And it's kind of hard to justify. So I don't think that this is a bad spot for possibly McKinnon and Rudolph. I will take the wait-and-see approach with Thielen, even though I know he has been excellent, and I have no problem if you're interested in saying, you know what, even if it's Josh Norman, he might be able to get it done. But that's a hard sentence to say. Moving on, New York Jets at the Bucks, 41-point total here. Jets are 2.5-point road favorites, 21-18.5. Did you see this one coming? Did you see the Jets being road favorites against the Bucks this year? No. Tampa Bay was the early season darling for everybody, and look how the mighty Buccaneers have fallen. Nah, but it's true. I mean, this is not a good football team right now. They're struggling with everything. I think Cutter has lost the locker room, to be honest with you. Jets, bad in adjusted fantasy points allowed, but on paper, this defense really isn't actually that bad. 31, 18, 27, and 30. Tampa Bay, 29, 26, 31, and 11. Tampa Bay is a defense where the results align with the fantasy production. They're not a good defense. Fitzmagic revenge game in full effect, no doubt. That's a great starting point. He's going to be subbing for the injured Jameis Winston. A smart, you know, I mean, their son's in it. They got to sit Eric Bledsoe down, and Eric Bledsoe is Jameis Winston. Eric Bledsoe that licks his fingers a lot and does weird shit. Like, he's, I don't know if he's a franchise quarterback just because I don't think the other players really like him. He's got a lot of arm talent, but it's kind of like a Jay Cutler thing. It's like, who is this guy? Mike Evans not playing, suspended. So you're going to see some good run for, you know, D-Jax would be interesting, but I'll be cautious. He's going to get Mo Claiborne. He's been very good this year. I don't really see the Bucs offense being that productive against this defense, even though this defense is not that good. But I think that Brait and Howard are interesting here. Jets giving it up to the tight end. We know Fitzmagic will, you know, have two tight end sets where Brait and Howard should be interesting. So I think that that's probably the play here on the Jets side. You got to like Robbie Henderson. I mean, he's their leading receiver, multiple TDs, multiple targets in the last couple games. So don't sleep on McCown either. He's been crushing, and the Bucs are allowing the second highest completion rate in the league in yards per game to the quarterback. So lowest sack rate in the NFL. I mean, McCown should be fine. But, you know, what's Josh McCown's ceiling? It's 275 yards and two touchdowns. Well, that's not true. He's actually had better games than that. So, I think that McCown could be in play, not necessarily a cash game quarterback, but not a bad idea. I don't know where the TDs go, and that's possibly why I would play McCown over the rest of the Jets skill position players, but I do think Robbie Anderson is interesting here. Moving on to Cleveland at Detroit, 43.5 points total, the highest spread on the day, Detroit minus 13. They are favored by 13. 28-15 in this one. Cleveland coming off the bye. They're 31-13, 18-31. Waiting for Hugh Jackson to be fired this year. Waiting for Josh Gordon to come back. Just another day in Cleveland where you turn on the Cavs just to find out that they're barely holding on. And then you don't want to relive the PTSD of losing to the Yankees. So rough time for Cleveland sports. It's dark over there. It's always, I mean, then again, it's always dark in Cleveland, right? I mean, it's always kind of like gray. sorry, Cleveland. Detroit, 13, 19, 15, and 25. They're an interesting defense. They're kind of like the Washington defense. Like, it feels like they're overperforming. Like, their DVOA is solid. Their adjusted fantasy points allowed is solid in a lot of measurables. They've had some really good games. But they kind of have their spots. You know, it feels like they have their spots where they get exploited, and then they have their spots when they look really good. So, you know, on the offensive side of this, it's Matthew P. Smashford. Let's call it a Smashford. He's obviously really in a good spot. I mean, Detroit really can't run the ball anyway, and Cleveland's rush defense is filthy. Lowest yards per carry allowed. We've seen good offenses struggle to run the ball against them. I mean, Le'Veon Bell started the whole thing when he wasn't able to run the ball against them. Detroit doesn't really want to run the ball. They throw the ball in 65% of the plays anyway. I mean, they're going to run it just because they're going to be in positive game script, but I just don't really see it being a big game for Abdullah. Last week was the week for Abdullah, and they couldn't get anything going on the goal line. So I think you got to like the pass offense here. You know, like I said, on the Cleveland side, they're going to give up the passing, and you have to really, really be interested in Marvin Jones, who's creeping up to fantasy wide receiver one. Three straight weeks with double digit targets, two touchdowns on Sunday night. Golden Tate, yeah, he's flirted with 10 targets on a regular basis. He's always going over 100 yards. He's got the yards after catch effect. You love that. He's more expensive, though, and Marvin Jones clearly is a red zone, end zone target who is just beasting out. So we'll figure out who's going to be guarded by actually, let me see if I can figure that out right now. Figure out who's going to get the Jason McCourty treatment. Now, Jason McCourty is, I believe, dealing with a little bit of an injury. So we will see. If he is out, then you just all in anybody. Who cares? We know that Golden Tate won't. But we'll see. We're going to find out. Hold on one second. Let me pull it up real quick. Well, yeah, Brian Body Calhoun is in the slot. Yeah, Mike Jordan on the outside. So it does look like McCourty is going to be out. So this should be a really good spot for Marvin Jones versus Jamar Taylor. Yeah, definitely interested in that. I mean, Jamar Taylor's PFF grade is good, but the problem is this pass defense as a unit just is not that effective. So you have some issues there on the back end. So definitely interested in Stafford, definitely interested in Jones and Tate. You can get on the Eric Ebron death tilt and 10 targets in the last 2 weeks. I mean, that's more than a lot of guys, to be completely honest with you. There's a lot of numbers where Ebron and those, just with those 10 targets, he's, you know, doing better than a lot of guys. So I don't, you know, he's got more targets than ASJ. He's got more targets than Cam Brate. There's a lot of guys in that 5K range who haven't gotten 10 targets in the last 2 weeks, and Ebron has. So you can get on that bandwagon. Pittsburgh at Indy. This is the other really lopsided one. 44.5 points here. Pittsburgh is favored by 10, 10.5. This one is moving towards the over. It's jumped up 1.5 points since opening. Pittsburgh 6, 10, 7, and 5 to the respective positions. Honestly, Pittsburgh's implied total should be at 30. I really do think that. I mean, this offense coming off the bye is good enough. Indy really hasn't faced any fireworks like this from a offensive perspective in a while. They really haven't seen an offense this good, skill position players this good. Indianapolis 25, 31, 25, and 23. It's obscenely obvious. I mean, you know, it was the Texans last week with Watson. It's silly to me that the Pittsburgh offense is it's silly to me that the Texans offense would get a 32-point implied total at home, and the Pittsburgh offense is going to get, you know, what, 27 here? We got Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell versus, okay, DeAndre Hopkins, fine. You know, Deshaun Watson, very exciting. It would make sense to me that Pittsburgh scores over 30 points in this game. Obviously, the hardest decision that you have to make is, you know, AB versus Le'Veon. They're both in a killer spot. So I think it has to be Bell, though, for me, just from a volume perspective. You know, last year in this spot, he touched the ball 27 times for 140 yards and a touchdown, 20 fantasy points. That was great. Brown went bananas, though, too, 27 fantasy points. Just absolutely torched Vontae Davis. In fact, I remember watching that game and just continuing to ask for Antonio Brown touchdowns. It was on Thanksgiving. You know, it could be that way again. I mean, Antonio could absolutely destroy this team. I have no issue saying that could be very, very true. So, you know, the problem is you're going to be in positive game script the whole time. And we know that in positive game script, you know, Kansas City, Cincinnati, even the Detroit game, I mean, Lev Bell had more than 27 touches and almost more than 30 touches in some of those games. So he is in a good spot. I mean, you're probably going to see 30 touches coming off the bye here. The question is do they get it by so much? You know, it's almost like the NBA blowout effect, you know? The other thing to be careful about is there's a lot of mouths to feed here in the Pittsburgh offense. Martavis Bryant is back. You have Antonio Brown as the best fantasy wide receiver in the game. Juju Smith-Schuster. Can we just call him JJSS? You know, blew up last week. Got his driver's license this week. Feeling good. Got his driver's license on the bye week. That was good to see. You could just go to Ben Roethlisberger and say, well, they're probably going to throw the ball a little bit, or you just go to Bell. So I think the order of plays is Bell, Ben, and then Brown. The Brown thing worries me because positive game script, he's seen, you know, he'll probably score a touchdown, but if he only sees 6 targets because they're targeting the other guys. And by the way, you know what they're going to do? This is definitely a Tomlin move. Martavis, you know, gets the slap on the wrist, the practice squad treatment. They come in for the feelings, the meetings. They bring in Roethlisberger, the quarterback's coach. They let Martavis air his grievances. He just says, man, I just want to be useful, man. You know, I just want to be playmaker. I'm a playmaker in this league. I want to be useful. Right? Okay. They sit in the meeting and Ben goes, you know, I really love your talent, Martavis, respect your work ethic. I just want to, you know, like, we can find a role for you in this offense, man. We're, you know, the ceiling is really high for this guy. They BS each other. And what do? They draw up a couple special plays for the kid. And you know, he gets to celebrate with the rest of the team. Now, will he get a special celebration like Juju? I'm not really sure if he will. He may just have to do some standardized high fives. You know, I mean, he's kind of isolated himself from this team. Unless that meeting didn't happen in which he, you know, that. So that's why I kind of nodded into the wide receivers. It's a little bit narrative driven, but there's a lot of, what I'm saying is there's a lot of guys. There's a lot of guys to catch balls there now. New England at Denver. Yikes, Denver. Yikes. Best defense in the league. Don't have a quarterback. Just have a couple guys. Paxton, Brock, and Trevor. That is honestly what a hilarious collection of gentlemen. 46-point total here. Patriots favored by 7.5 on the road in Mile High. I mean, that's crazy. 26 implied points in Mile High. Vegas hates Denver right now. New England 30, 27, 28, and 28, I believe, to the tight end as well. Not a good defense, but we're going to talk about how it's just their fantasy production has been a little bit deceiving, okay? Denver 12, 4, 3, and 29. Can you say Gronk smash? You know, I mean, a phenomenal week to invest in Gronk if you want to get in there. They're allowing 10-plus fantasy points to the tight end on a weekly basis. 29th in the league there. We've seen it. We know it. It's going to happen. Gronk is in a great spot here in Mile High. He's been trouble for the Broncos before, and he should be in a good spot here, no doubt about it. As for the other receivers, I'm not that interested. Alshon's big game was, you know, fine. I think that they really have just kind of quit on this team. And there's no reason for them to continue to sacrifice their body for a team that has no quarterback and no offensive identity. I mean, you know, the only reason you do this is because you hate the Patriots, which Keeb Tlaib might do. So I'm not touching the rest of the receivers. They have too many mouths to feed. It's been too unpredictable. Chris Hogan was really, really good earlier in the year. And he got banged up and he's kind of been lower. We don't know what Brandon Cook's need is going to be. As far as the running backs go, phenomenal rush front seven. The carries have been split, you know, all over the place. I just don't think you have to go with too many New England assets except for possibly Brady, possibly Gronk. And they're priced up, but I don't think it's a bad play to go with either of them. I'm not going to fault you for either of them. Have no problem with that whatsoever. Broncos, nope, not touching it. Don't care. I mean, Osweiler is bad. Yes, the Patriots defense is bad. However, they have not allowed more than 17 points in the last month. Something has changed. They figured out something to allow fewer points. They've had some even tough matchups. You know, Tampa Bay on the road, the Chargers at home, the Falcons. Those are good offenses. Those are all good quarterbacks. I mean, you have, you know, at least good skill position players and, you know, in a lot of those situations, and they just took them away. So something is working for this defense. I do believe it. I don't know what it is. I don't think they're a good defense. I think that they figured out something that works for them, which is something that is believable for the Patriots, you know, coaching staff, for them to be like, okay, here's our weakness. This is what we have to stop doing. Well, it probably worked because they're the Patriots. Houston at the Rams, 46.5 points, 17 to 29. The Rams, second heaviest favorite on the slate at 11.5 points. Oh, Houston, so sad. Houston, 27th to the quarterback, second to the running back, 30th to the wide receiver, and 21st to the tight end. This is the reverse of the Jacksonville effect. And what happens? You give up a shit ton of points and you lose games. It's the wrong way to design a defense. You don't run stop first. You have to stop the pass first. It's the passer's league. You take away option one, and then you figure out the rest, right? There's a lot of NFL quality players who can know how to stop the running back. There's only so many players who know how to stop elite quarterbacks and wide receivers. So Houston's defense, not exactly that great. The Rams, though, are designed in the same way that these good teams are, these good defenses are right now, the Jaguars and the Chargers. The Rams, 2 to the quarterback, 30 to the running back, 6 to the wide receiver, and 13 to the tight end. So they're the exact opposite here. And one team winning a lot, scoring the most points in the league. Very exciting offense, very exciting young core. The other team was exciting when Deshaun Watson was there, and now they're lost to the Colts. I mean, it's over. You probably get Houston tickets on StubHub for a very inexpensive number. Rams, like I said, highest scoring offense in football, scoring 83 fantasy points per game. You have to love Goff with one of your wide receivers here, no doubt about it. Sammy Watkins priced up just a touch, $6,400 on FanDuel, but an insanely juicy matchup with Kevin Johnson, who just got toasted by T.Y. Hilton. Similar thing. I mean, you know, okay, fine. Sammy's 4-4 and T.Y.'s 4-3. T.Y.'s 4-3, 4-3 speed. We forget about that. T.Y. and DeSean Jackson are 4-3. How many guys are 4-3 in this league? I mean, there's a couple 4-4s. But 4-3 is another level, and T.Y. is on another level. Like, God, it's fun to watch him in the open field. So no doubt that I like Sammy Watkins. He only saw two targets, but he only saw in 51% of snaps last week. But as I understand it, they took out all the starters in the fourth. So don't read too much into that snap rate. I mean, I think he is a boom or bust type guy, you know. But they can exploit this Houston pass defense for deep routes, no doubt about it. And you know what? Todd Gurley is going to struggle. I mean, this is a reverse funnel, and you do just Houston just does not allow running backs to be productive. If there's that's one real thing that they are really good at. So I think Goff airs it out. I think Goff probably throws, you know, 30 attempts and has to rely on the air, and they probably exploit the fact that Houston's pass defense is pretty terrible. So I have no problem with Goff. I have no problem with Watkins. I have no problem with Woods. And I'll, you know, keep an eye on Cooper Kupp as well. I think that they are, it's, I don't know, order of preference. I don't necessarily know who I have, order of preference there necessarily. I think it's just kind of whoever fits your process or what game style you're playing. New Orleans at Buffalo. This is a really interesting game. In fact, this is a real life good football game. Like Buffalo coming off the long week, they had the letdown spot in, you know, against the Jets. That's a big one. They want that one back, but this is a good spot to get right. 46.5 points, 24 implied for New Orleans. They are road favorites by 2.5 points, 22 for Buffalo. You have to think everybody's hammering the under, and I think the defensive identity recently of the Saints and the idea that the Buffalo defense is very good, the idea is that what's moving this game towards the under and towards New Orleans, right? So I don't know. I actually think this is probably a sharp over. I think you have the ability. Tyrod's been really good. I mean, he's been very, very efficient. He figured out how to hit Deontay Thompson in his, you know, and you have LeSean McCoy coming off of a long week and a bad loss. I think LeSean McCoy is in a smash spot. I think Mark Ingram's in a really good spot here. New Orleans 15, 20, 10, and 9 to the respective positions in adjusted fantasy points allowed. I think the defense on the edges is real. I think the pass defense is real. I think that they do struggle with the run. And when you have an effective run game like Chicago proved, you can exploit this New Orleans team and just control the clock and keep Breeze off the field. And, you know, their new run identity will keep that game in close proximity. And I think that's probably why Buffalo wants to do it, or the way that Buffalo wants to do it. The issue that I have with the under here, which is why it makes sense, is that Buffalo's defense is actually not that great. 10, 23 to the running back, 10, 11 to the wide receiver, and 20 to the tight end. So Drew Brees, I mean, is able to shred any top 10 pass defense. We know that. He's going to be capable of getting, you know, his looks the way he wants to do it. You have two elite running backs in Ingram and Kamara against a rush defense that hasn't been that good recently. So for me, I think that New Orleans probably doesn't have a lot of issues scoring. And I think that as a result, Buffalo hurries up. You see a lot more passing downs. And that's why I think the over is interesting here. This is a really interesting game. I think people will probably go to it, but they'll also kind of hem and haw about it, but I see this one being productive. You know, you don't expect to see that much running back production versus Buffalo, but both teams, you know, the Saints and the Bills, both allowing about 20 points to the position per game. But it's a much better spot for Shady. I mean, well, I say that the issue is that the New Orleans offensive line is just so good. 4+ yards per carry. But their defense allows that much too. And on the Buffalo side, they're only allowing about 3.7 yards per carry, which is below average. So they're an above average as far as just yards per carry, but they also only earn that much too. So Shady hasn't really had like that 5 yards per touch game, whereas you have Kamara and you have Ingram, who both literally are above 5 yards per touch. They're so efficient because of the way that that offense works. You can't load the box against them with Drew Brees. It just doesn't work. So the Buffalo, you know, offensive line, not quite as good as the New Orleans offensive line. And if Tyrod struggles, then LeSean will struggle. And that's the hard part here is how good is this New Orleans pass defense and will they force Tyrod into struggles? So, the thing that I do like is, what I was saying about Tyrod struggling and Shady struggling together, when Shady goes as Tyrod goes, does that make sense? So when Shady succeeds. When Tyrod struggles, Shady struggles. You know, against bad defenses like Tampa Bay and Oakland, they both shredded. They shredded. The thing that I do like, the correlation there, this is not a divisional game. And what we saw last week against the Jets was the second leg of a divisional game. That is statistically a nightmare for running backs and offenses. It's a brutal spot to project because what you have is you have a team who's already familiar with a running back. You have schemes that are well known. You have tape that's well known, tendencies that are well known, and then you played them already once, so you've seen them and you know how guys are going to play. So it's all there for a team to just say, "We know what you're going to do. We know exactly what you're going to do, and we're going to meet you right there in the hole." So you know, the non-divisional game here for Shady, I do like, and I think that New Orleans is susceptible here. It's a must-win spot for the Bills to kind of keep the momentum going. Dallas at Atlanta, 50.5 points here. Oof, you worried about the letdown? So am I. We've seen a couple games be projected highly, but I think this one probably actually is going to go over. You know, you have real holes in both of these defenses. I mean, you know, real holes in both of these defenses. So Atlanta favored by 3 at home. Dallas is 20th, 14th, 24, and 10 to the respective positions. Atlanta, 17, 24, 13, and 8 in AFPA to the respective 4 core positions. I'm going to be honest with you. This sets up as a Matt Ryan game for me. Let's pretend for a second that Julio catches that 45-yard touchdown pass. It's an instant 6 points for Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan comes out of that Carolina game with 28 fantasy points, 2 passing touchdowns, nearly 300 yards, and they win. No turnovers. He's not going to be priced at $7,700 at home as a favorite in one of the biggest totals of the week. You know, I mean, I think the Dallas pass defense, however, this is the complicated part. We just saw, I mean, Alex Smith in a very, very similar spot. And if it weren't for the Tyreek Hill halftime touchdown, you probably wouldn't be that impressed with Alex Smith's line. I mean, you know, it wasn't bad, but it wasn't like, you know, amazing. You know, they only ended up scoring 17 points here. It was, you know, they were able to limit the effectiveness of this team. And, you know, 2 passing touchdowns, fine. But I think that the Cowboys defense, as bad as they were, I think you're probably seeing a lot of their numbers slanted by how bad they were against Rodgers. You know, Rodgers shredded them, right? Let's not forget that. And if they have Zeke, they're going to squeeze the ball. They're going to slow things down. And the reality is that Kansas City was fine, but they weren't that exciting. And, you know, 263 passing yards with, only a passer rating of about 100 for Alex Smith, who's been just in a smash, just smashing people. You weren't able to really run the ball. They didn't choose to run the ball that often because you were in negative game script. And you only had, the core receivers weren't even that good. So I don't know. I don't know whether it was just third down effectiveness that they struggled with and they weren't able to convert on third downs or the turnovers or whatever the case may be. I'm not really sure how, there's only one real turnover and that was kind of late in the game. So what I'm trying to say is this. I can't get a read on the Dallas defense. Now, the one thing I will say is that they are certainly not as good as the Carolina defense. So if you kind of buy, commutative property here, take Matt Ryan's performance against a very good Carolina defense and you think, okay, what's his ceiling at home against the Cowboys defense if Julio is healthy? Now, I think that's the big if. I think he is. I mean, he came off the sideline in that game for a couple of plays, but then he went back out on that last series, and he was there in that last series. So I don't think he misses here. Their season isn't hanging in the balance. They need him. If they are in this because they're still like second in wild card standings behind Seattle. They needed to win that game against the Panthers, but they still have one more game against the Panthers at home. Panthers, Dallas is right now 5-3. Okay. Let's say this. Dallas goes to 5-4. Atlanta goes to 5-4. All of a sudden you're tied. You got to think Seattle wins a game, but can Seattle overtake Los Angeles? If they sweep Los Angeles, then there's a question. Point is that Atlanta and Detroit right now, very, very invested in the, need to make sure that they try to pass these last two spots here. They need to get into these last two spots with Carolina and Dallas. It's very important for Atlanta to get this win, and I think they can. And so Matt Ryan, it all goes through Matt Ryan, and I think Julio plays. So I think this game actually sets up really well for the Atlanta offense. They looked okay in that game against Carolina, and the defense created some turnovers. I think that they're probably going to figure things out a little bit here. You're going to have some flashes of this team being more aggressive, and they're more aggressive. They're a very interesting fantasy option. I mean, they were in that game against Carolina. They just couldn't finish, and Julio dropped a touchdown. Julio doesn't drop a touchdown. We're talking about a different team here. Okay, that is it for the main slate. Monday, Miami versus Carolina. Oh, my God. Get out of here. Carolina favored by 10 at home against Miami. This is gross. I don't want anything to do with this game. Maybe Funchess, maybe Samuel. Miami rush defense is good, so McCaffrey's limited upside. Maybe Cam, I don't know. I'm not playing the Monday night slate for this game. Not for this game. Why are you going to risk money on Miami versus Carolina? Carolina defense? That's it. It's not interesting. It's not an interesting game. It's not going to be fun to watch. We've had some good Sunday night games recently, but this one is not one of them. I think this is a pretty lopsided affair. Carolina at home with a lot of momentum in their corner. So that is it, guys. Keep an eye on the injury stuff. There's a lot of injuries right now, but there's plenty of players to be interested in this week. We are going to jump into the player pool tomorrow, Thursday. Expect that podcast. Thank you for retweeting. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for listening. Thank you for reviewing. That's it. Guys, hey, we'll see you tomorrow, and we will bring you some NBA action.